if people attack his project, he's really prepared to stand up for his developers.
Yeah.
But this is just done so far.
I see a new segment coming here, you know.
I can feel wind a segment.
Angry Chris.
I think we should wire his nipples up to some kind of power supply and just say, BSD is rubbish. BSD is rubbish. Just see how quickly we can wind him up.
Start putting insulting comments in the network block driver support module or something.
Season 5, Episode 9 of Lug Radio.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
And welcome to the show. My name's Chris Proctor.
I'm Adam Sweet.
I'm Stuart Langridge.
And I'm barely here. I'm Johnny Bacon.
And on today's show, we're going to be talking about...
We're going to be talking about the Peach Project, which is the open movie being produced by the Blender Institute. And it's all furry, it's not weird, like Elephant's Dream. And we're going to be talking to Sasha Hoogeburger, who is the director of that movie. We're also going to be talking about...
I don't believe his name's Hoogeburger, by the way. But we'll find that out later.
That's a best estimate.
We've got dates for Lug Radio Live in the US, so keep listening to the show and you'll find out when those are. We're still running the Pimp My Lug Radio competition, so listen and win yourself an Asus EE PC.
We're going to have a late night Lug Radio lock-in. We're going to talk about whether Linux distributors should lock or optimize their applications with their servers. That's the worst description I could have given, but it's something like that. Anyway.
This is not it's better than it sounds. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
We're also going to be looking at Stuart's top Trump scores.
We are, indeed.
Indeed we are. So, thank you very much.
And of course, we've got some emails and some forums threads to read out. So
we have indeed. So, let's get on with it.
Okay, on the show now, we've got Sasha Hoodeburger from...
Almost there.
Yeah,
almost
we've been... There. Sasha and I have been trying to pronounce his surname for the last 10 minutes. So, Sasha, please, say what your last name is.
My last name is... Hoodeburger.
That's such a
it's
perfect
very name. Easy. Hoodeburger.
That's very
you
cool.
You can practice on it later, but it's okay for now.
Sasha is from the Peach Project, which is the open movie project from the Blender Institute, and we've got him on the show today to talk about it. So, how is work progressing on the project? How are you doing?
It's doing quite okay. We're always a bit behind schedule, but that's normal in these kind of situations when you're making a movie with only 7-8 people, and that's okay. But we're already searching for external help, and that's the only way to finish this movie.
So tell us about what kind of the size and the scale of the project. I mean, it's obviously a cartoon. It's an animated short, I believe. Tell us how long it is and what people are working on and things like that.
The movie, it's going to be around 8.5 minutes movie about furry animals. That was one of Tom's goals, to have a funny furry movie. The people that are working on the movie, a few names: Andy Goralczyk, he's from Germany, he's our art director and main modeler. Then we have Enrico Valenza from Italy. He does all the painting, he did storyboarding, and he's working on an environment because we need an entire forest, and it takes a lot of work. Next to that, we have from the United States, we have Nathan Segdahl. He is our rigger. He makes sure that we can animate with all our characters. Next to that, he will also be animating. Then we have William Renish from Denmark. He's an animator. Okay. And then we have the technical guys. From Belgium, we have Brecht van Lommel. It seems he's a brilliant guy, but that's what they told me. I don't know, but anyway, I'm not really into the technical things of Blender and computers, but that's okay. I believe it when they say it. Next to that, another technical director, that's Campbell Barton from Australia.
Cool.
Yay.
To finish it off, we also have a composer from Germany, Jan Morgenstern. He will make the music, but also the sound effect. And he also did that with the first open source movie, Elephant's Dream.
Yes, yeah.
And the first thing I heard what he made for our movie is going to be, wow, it's so amazing. In Holland, we would say it gave me chicken skin.
Goosebumps.
It's like
goosebumps here, here in England. Yeah,
exactly. And yeah, amazing. And well, next to that, we have, of course, Tom Rosendahl, the Blender developer. And he is producing and working on Blender.
Yeah.
And next to that, we have the only female in the team, Margreet Riphagen. She is like slowly taking over Ton's role as producer, so Ton can do more developing, working on Blender. And I myself are here as writer, director, and storyboarding, and some character designing.
Cool.
And at the moment, I'm animating, because that's going to be our biggest issue, the animating.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay.
So, yeah, we need a lot of animating. So.
Well, yeah, being an animated movie and all. A question
you
about...
you want things to move, and yeah.
it does normally look better, yeah. Question
absolutely.
Then. Elephant's Dream, watching it, it was visually very impressive. It looked beautiful. But the script was a bit weird. Now, when people asked about it, then the response was, it's more like an art house movie rather than like a Pixar film. Is the new film, is there a name for it, by the way, other than Peach?
The work title for now is Rabbit's Revenge, which is, of course, not good for a final movie. like, in a week or so, we will bring out a new title, and we have some ideas, and we're hoping for a nice, subtle title that fits the our silly movie.
Okay, I mean, so will Rabbit's Revenge? Will it have a more a script writing which is more accessible to ordinary people, or is it kind of art housey and things again?
That was the idea. The thing with Elephant's Dream, it was a very intelligent script, but
yes.
The problem with that was that when you watch it,
want to use a frame?
Well, let's say when you're watching a movie, it has to be about the moment. You want to be entertained when you see a movie, and the thing with Elephant's Dream is you're afterwards, you're talking about it, you're discussing it, and then you find out there are so many things in Elephant's Dream to discover, but you don't see it at all during the watching.
Yeah.
And what I hope to aim is that you just see our movie, you enjoy it, you laugh, and after that you're going home and you're fully happy and you just forget about it, so you can watch it again a week later and cool. still laugh about it. So
you're doing the script writing for this one?
Yeah, I'm not afraid to admit it, but I wrote the story. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's okay, I guess. I mean, I'll survive that. Tan wanted something funny and I would say stupid maybe, because sometimes stupid things can be funny, and so that's why he asked me, and that's okay. Well,
fair enough.
Yeah.
You're on the white show.
The thing that got me, there's you've got, what do you say, 7 or 8 people working full time on this, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Now, presumably they have to eat, they have to be paid. Where does the money come from?
Where does the money come from? Sponsors. There are a lot of sponsors.
Like who?
We already sold. I don't know how many DVDs were already sold, but before the project started, we already sold over 1,000 DVDs.
Nice. Wow.
That's our main income, I believe, yeah.
Okay, so that's enough to pay anybody. I'm impressed by
that. Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Maybe Ton has other ways to get money, but I don't, as long as I get paid. It's underpaid, but that's okay. I'm making a movie, so that's fun enough. And, 80 hours a week working, and that's okay. I mean, who needs a weekend and social life? I'll survive.
I have a couple of questions for you. The first one is a bit more kind of intellectual.
Okay, I can try.
I find this unlikely.
Yeah, intellectual is not something that we're particularly familiar with.
Yeah, me neither, but...
Well, great minds unite. Elephant's Dream was something of a first in the fact that it pushed Blender, it pushed the technology, and it was something that a lot of people weren't sure whether it was possible to produce something that looked professional. And the only thing that people really seemed to criticise it on at parts was the storyline being a bit strange, as we've discussed. Peach is obviously another, you know, a lot of things have been learned from Elephant's Dream. Do you believe that Open Movies have got the ability, like, to really compete, both at a technical level in terms of the 3D, and at story level with things such as what's coming from Pixar and things like that? Are we seeing a new revolution in terms of small groups of talented artists coming together to produce really, you know, films that are as good as, and not just feel a bit shit compared to what's in the cinema?
I absolutely think so. Of course, we still have to prove it, but the thing is that, the Elephant's Dream already showed that, you know, the technical side, that was okay, that was growing, and now, okay, we learned from that. And now we need to work on the story. I'm not saying it will end up with a great story, but we're aiming for it. And I mean, every step, every movie, you'll get like a few steps in the right direction.
Yeah.
It will not be a perfect story. It will not be a perfect movie. And there will be a lot of technical issues still. But with every movie that's going to be made, you're going to make like some huge steps. I've seen Blender developing the last months, and it's amazing. Normally, I don't really care about that development of Blender. But what I've seen so far, well, I'm really excited. So yeah, I absolutely believe that it is possible, and that the open source thing, it's gonna be huge after this.
Fantastic. And I have one final small question before we finish the interview.
Yeah.
People don't really know what the storyline is. Can you give us a little bit of an exclusive? Can you give us a hint about what the story is going to be about?
We know it involves
fluffy things, but, you know.
It's not really intelligent, but anyways, it's about the big fat rabbit. He is being bullied, harassed by three annoying rodents, and he's getting even, so...
Excellent.
Akinosis problem very well.
So it's the rabbits getting even with the rodents.
Yes.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, we're pleased that you've managed to give us something, something that we didn't know about the project.
Well, I'm sure you did know, but that's okay. Visit us at our blog site. Yep. It's peach.blender.org, and you can see how things are going.
Fantastic. So. And when can we expect to see it released? When is it going to be out?
The date is the end of March.
Right.
And if we're going to make it, I think so. With a little luck, we can make it. So.
And one last thing, how can people...
Sorry, but you already had your last question.
What?
What's all shot?
Sorry, but... No, okay. For this one.
You see these people from the continent coming on the show and telling us how to do it? It's unfair. One last question. How can people get involved? How can people help the project? So you said you're looking for help. Is this something that you need to be an absolute genius?
Well, the thing with external help is that you need to be sure. We really have to know those people, because you cannot rely too much on external help. I mean, the only way you can help us is just by, you know, visit the blog site, pre-order the DVD, right. And you know, just show interest in some way, and that already helps us a lot. So
fantastic. Well, excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We're all big fans of what you guys are doing over there. And
thank you very much. It was nice talking to you.
And say hello to Campbell from us, because he's a listener of the show. So
yeah, I know. And the funny thing is, now we have this interview, that little sucker is at Euro Disney. Come on, what about that? His favorite show, and he's not here.
I will
say hello for you.
Oh, I see. So you sell 1,000 DVDs, and suddenly someone goes to Euro Disney.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. That's how we spend the money, absolutely. So.
Euro Disney, why are you
thanks
not
for that, by the way.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, and keep up the great work, and we look forward to seeing the final film in March. So.
Okay, see ya.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Slug Radio Top Trump!
A registered trademark of Winning Moves UK Limited.
Welcome, 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 welcome to Lug Radio Top Trumps. And in this episode, we've got the same five criteria. That's right, the same five criteria that we've had in the last couple of shows. Now, number one, it's my friend and it's yours, freedom crusading. Does this person like to crusade towards the freedom? Does this person run Gentoo on their microwave? Number two, tinkering. Do they like to jam screwdrivers into things that screwdrivers should never have jammed into those things, like screwdrivers don't like to jam things? It makes sense to me and to tinkerers everywhere across the world. Number three, underdog. Is this person an underdog? And do they support the underdog? Do they like people who are a bit shit? Write in answers on a postcard. Number four, communitization. Communitizing things with community tools to promote the use of community tools. Community. It's everybody's best friend. And finally, cheap. Is this person cheap, 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 cheap? Like some kind of budget budgerigar. Let's move over to you, Graham.
This week's contestant on Lug Radio Top Trumps is...
Oh, me, actually. Right.
At last, someone who makes... Oh, sorry. At last, someone who makes some sense.
Hang on.
Graham.
Stuart scores for Freedom Crusading... 9. My score for tinkering... Excuse me. Stuart score for tinkering... 7. Stuart's score for... I'm not calling it underdog. 2. Stuart's score for communitization. 5. And finally, Stuart's score for cheapness. 6.
So, Ack, you're a fat ginger bastard.
No, you can just all buy it off. That's what you can do.
Right,
that's not very fair, is it? Let's be honest.
But on the other hand, you come quite high with freedom crusading.
Well, yes, I do, to be honest with you. I do these days, at least. That's not why I got into Linux.
Why did you do it then?
Well, when I first started using it, it was Minix rather than Linux. I was at university.
Right.
And they had HP.
This is one of the old-fashioned stories.
He longed for the days when men were men and wrote their own device drivers.
No, absolutely not.
In Python.
Yeah, someone had the idea first.
That would have been nice, to be honest with you. No, when I went to university, back in the days, only 1994, the university had...
After I went to university.
Yeah, HP UX and Solaris machines. And I'd never come across Unix before, and I thought, oh, what's this thing? And started poking around and found out there was a version you could run on your computer at home. And I had a really, really crappy IBM PS2 386.
Right.
And you could get Minix. Linux was available, but it wouldn't run on my machine, because originally I had a 286, and Linux wouldn't run on it, so I started with Minix.
Right.
And that's where it all started from. After that, I got a machine that was capable of running Linux, so I got Slackware and so on and so forth. But initially, at that point, that was a combination of tinkering and the fact that I could do this Unix stuff that we had at university, but for free.
Hmm.
I knew nothing about community. I knew very little about freedom. Free as in speech stuff rather than free as in beer.
I thought,
wow, I can get this for nothing. And I was excited by the fact that I could type LS and then get a listing rather than DIR on my old machine, you know.
Didn't have a particularly prosperous childhood, obviously, did you?
No, sorry. You know, I found this stuff interesting. But that's why I got into all of it.
Your scores are interesting because, I mean, it's clearly heavily weighted towards... Freedom Crusading with a 9, which is one of the high. Well, it is obviously it's the highest score for you, and your lowest score is Underdog. Now, I find that interesting because I've known you for quite a while now, and you generally seem to be somebody who supports the Underdog. It's a little lower.
I think before you answer, I've just stuck the boot in with the fat ginger bastard thing.
Indeed,
but, I mean it. It surprises me that your underdog score is so low.
Yeah, because you could eat a dog.
because I would expect you to have chosen Linux, I mean, whether it's the underdog or not, but because you consider it to be an intellectual choice.
To some extent, the reason I rated myself so low on that is because I don't support underdogs because they are underdogs. Yeah. If Linux became popular,
you wouldn't move away.
I wouldn't move away from it. The challenge, the interesting thing for me is not the fact that not many people are using Linux, and that therefore it's an underdog thing to do. If 70% of the machines in the world were using Linux and everybody used it, I think that was brilliant. I wouldn't suddenly shift to OpenBSD or QNX or something, because that's not the point of it. I tend to find reason I look like I align myself with the underdog a lot is because a lot of my views are minority views.
Yeah,
but I don't hold them because they are minority views. I just hold them because everyone else is wrong. So
I'm assuming one of these views that you're referring to is your belief in. I'm going to stop.
Move on. Thank you. So,
it just ain't worth it.
Yeah, the reason the freedom crusading thing comes up high is increasingly as I use Linux to learn more about things like the community. I mean, my communitization score is not that high. I think the community is a good thing, and it's great, and I'm part of it to some extent, but it's not an overriding driver for me. If there was less of a community, I wouldn't think less of Linux and open source software, to be honest with you. But increasingly, as I got involved with Linux, with open source, with the free software community, whatever, I thought this freedom stuff is important. And the reason I rate myself so high on it is, as I have mentioned lots and lots and lots of lots of times before on the show, I don't see the point in supporting Linux if, in order to make Linux popular, we have to turn it into basically something like Mac OS X, where half of it is proprietary. Because I think that the beauty of the thing is precisely the fact that you can download it, fiddle with it. Even if, I mean, I can't. I'm never going to be able to hack the ATI graphics driver, ever. You know, it's not something that interests me. It's not something I could do. My brain doesn't work like that. Fine. But I know that someone else can. And they can't if we start to move towards things like, say, FGLRX, take an example. So the fact that I know someone can do this is really important to me, and I'm petrified of the day when we say, yes, Linux has won the battle, 30% of it's proprietary, because at that point, I don't think we won a battle at all.
Someone, not much of a win by then, is it?
Yeah, someone who I think might have been George Castro said the goal isn't Linux on the desktop, the goal is a free desktop. And I thought, I'd like to have that hacked in the stone above my house. That's really important. Like, my wife shit canned the idea. Unsurprisingly,
you know, that's made his fucking day, saying that. He's going to be well chuffed.
Of course it has. I am well chuffed.
So it's basically the reason you want the freedom, so people can then hack on it and make a better desktop. If somebody came along with the perfect desktop that is perfect in every single way, but it was closed source, would you at that point care? Or is the freedom... what am I trying to say here?
Basically? I imagine you'd just be pissed off and jealous at that point.
Why freedom? What is... You know, freedom's all very well, but there must be an end to it, surely.
Is it freedom for freedom's sake?
So, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Is it a means to an end, or is it just a...
I think
we all have a view on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't largely think that... step back slightly. I tend, in most areas of my life, to not like one particular person or entity or whatever having control of things. I like spreading the control out, whether it's politics or software or... clothing or whatever. I don't like the idea that someone gets to say, you will do this, and you just have to lump it, whoever you are, because they've got control. I don't like monopolies in any way.
Right.
So software freedom gives the ability to not have that sense of control.
But don't you have that anyway? Because you can choose Windows or you can choose OS X, you know? You've got a choice.
Yeah, but I can't choose how I want Windows to work. Yeah, even though I'm probably never going to say... I mean, I've got in my head a plan for how I'd like Linux to work and how I'd like my desktop to work. And, you know, I start off with Ubuntu or Fedora, whatever I'm using this week, and I make certain tweaks to it. And there are other tweaks I'd like to make, but I don't have the time or I don't have the money or whatever. But I'm aware that if I decided to, or, you know, if I set up a company selling certificates and made $300 million, then I could make a desktop which worked my way. I can't do that with Windows. I can't do it with Mac OS X either.
I think
basically shit out of luck.
I think the interesting thing about that, people who've been listening to LaGradio for a long time will be very well aware of Axe's views on freedom. It's been discussed once or twice in the last 4 years. But the thing I think it's interesting, because that number 9 I don't think that really sufficiently describes you and your freedom, because your approach to freedom has changed in my mind. The fact that you've always been resolute about freedom, but you've become you've approached it in a different way, I'd say. Like, if you listen to earlier shows with Overlook Radio, your freedom was very much quite zealous in many ways, whereas your freedom nowadays seems to be less zealous, but it's kind of like, it's still fundamentally, you know, we're going after freedom.
You're still
but
absolute,
it's,
I guess. You're still more absolute, reasoned, aren't you?
But more reasoned. And I think that's a different type of freedom crusading. That's where I think you've changed, but your core principle hasn't changed, but your approach has changed, which I think is interesting.
Possibly. I mean,
and I'm curious why that is. Is that something you've noticed, or is that something only we noticed?
It's something that I've tried to do a bit, I suppose, because I think, well, I used to believe that RMS's approach of just saying, we need freedom, we need freedom, we need freedom, trying to convince people to use Linux open source desktops purely on the basis of it being free as in freedom, I used to think that was a good idea. But in practice, it doesn't work that well. So you have to some extent, moderate it. The problem is that it's jolly difficult to moderate the way you present the view without moderating the view. Yeah. You know, people say, well, you need to be more moderate. And what that actually means is, well, you should allow some closed source software, which I totally disagree with.
Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult for me to not be zealous about the way I present the view, but still be zealous about the view itself. Yes. If you see what I mean.
I think that pretty much exactly sums up what I'm on about, is that your presentation of the view is nowhere near as hardcore, but you're still, your principle has remained the same.
Yeah. Well, the problem, people will say, you know, we need to be more, zealots need to be less zealoty about it. And to a large extent, I agree. And I've attempted to do that. But about 60% of the time, zealots need to be less zealous about it is actually secret code for zealots need to shut up and let me just use closed source drivers. Zealots need to shut up and let me use closed source software. We need to not fight for freedom all the time, just, you know, some of the time. And that really fucking fucks me off.
I think without derailing it into a argument about freedom, but there's also the element of people should have the freedom to do what they want to do.
Yeah, well,
we're ramming their ethics down your throat.
Yeah, this is something I always want to talk about, because I mean the GPL is a fine license in many ways, but it does actually restrict freedom. This has been a big debate on the OpenBSD mode.
We've had lots of discussions about this before. But, so, I mean, what you're talking about is the freedom of torturers to torture people. I don't think that the freedom to restrict one another's rights is a right in need of protection.
Moving on a bit.
I mean,
cheapness.
One tiny extra thing to say on that. The reason that's a 9 rather than a 10 is that I'm aware that I'm not all the way there yet.
Would you like to get there? Would you like to be a 10?
Everywhere I find where I could improve the amount I move towards freedom, I try and do so, but I haven't made it all the way. Now, some people think that that entirely invalidates my view on everything, and I don't think it does. In exactly the same way that I can recommend to people that they don't smoke, even though I'm a smoker.
Right. Before we disappear, I just want to say that I know a few people, and certainly it occurs to me, that without people like you who are willing to stand in the corner and fucking scream and shout for what you believe in, half the rest of us wouldn't even know about it in the first place. And I think it's an old phrase, if you've never played on the far curb, you can't even see the middle of the road. So I think we need people that argue.
And
this
in
point.
A flip way, playing devil's advocate, and this doesn't apply to you, absolutely, but the people who are zealots, it can also put a lot of people off.
Yes.
And that's where I think Acker's got it absolutely spot on. I mean, I rib him about sometimes using non-free software. And when I rib him about it, like we were talking about it earlier on, it was largely because of things that he said 3 years ago. But Acker, to me, gets it right in the fact that he's absolutely resolute about his views, but he doesn't turn into a dick about it. And that's the thing I like. And that's the reason why I think you've got it right. Cheapness surprised me, because you put yourself quite down for cheap. I don't think you're as cheap as you think you are.
I scored myself a 6 for cheap, and that's because I have increasingly found that I resent paying for software. It's not just like, you know, I like not to do it. I resent it.
Do you know, more
if I have to pay for it.
I started sneering at people that do pay, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
if you're a small software producer, this is precisely what's wrong with the Linux community.
Yeah. Pirate it. I mean, carry on.
this is precisely the point. I mean, I totally agree with Chris there. Yeah. If you're... There are a lot of producers on Windows and the Mac who are selling small bits of software for 20 quid.
Yeah.
If you look at, or they're selling small bits of software for 200 quid. Look at Fog Creek, Joel Spolsky's company. They sell fog bugs, and it's $199 per user to get fog bugs, right? That's £100. That's basically nothing. But I resent paying £100 for software where I think, well, it's just a bug tracker, isn't it? So what I'd end up doing is getting Bugzilla or Track or something and then thinking, oh, well, fog bugs does this other thing. And putting in all this work...
Yeah.
Just so I can be using open source all the way. What I'd like is a way of saying I'd like to pay for this, but it still be open source. But realistically, I can't think of a way of doing that because I'll pay, but other people won't. So if you're the company who makes that stuff, you've got no business model.
Yeah,
this is... I mean, for people who sell bits of software for 20 and 30 and 40 quid, they're not going to make money in support and services. Red Hat can do it by going to Ford and saying, we'll supply you 500,000 desktops and we'll support them and we'll service them and we'll give you upgrades. Yeah. And Ford will pay for that. But little companies that sell 50 quid software won't do it. And there is a bit of a problem with that and the open source model. But... that's why I'm cheap, because I resent paying 20 and 30 quid for software. I really do, and it's sad.
Indeed.
Yes. Sorry, I was just looking at scores there. Have we covered the tinkering?
Tinkering's just fun. I mean, the reason I rate myself relatively highly on that 7 is because a lot of what I find myself doing is just poncing around. Yeah, you know, I mean, we did the...
Hamster teeth.
Not that sort of promising around. We did the This Week IR Mostly Been Playing With segment in the last series. And a lot of that, I mean, things like Tilda, the little pop-down terminal and stuff, that was just me, I think, oh, here's an interesting thing, play with it for a bit. I've been writing little Python programs for my mobile phone.
And again,
they're just, you know, I like this, I'll play with it for a few days. That seemed quite interesting.
It sounds like that's kind of where you started out working anyway, with Minix. You started out just tinkering, drifted into...
It's weird, because Ak and I had lunch the other day and we were talking about this, is that one thing I like about Ak is that he writes lots of these little Python programs that do something very specifically. And that's very much a tinkering thing. It's quite cool. And sometimes people worry too much about writing general purpose software. And then instead of just writing little things for them that works. And I know that you were saying, Jono points to Ak, that he's going to try and just concentrate more on that instead of trying to write lots of general purpose things.
My sort of New Year's resolution this year, I do, like you said, a lot of tinkery things where I'll write a little one-shot program that does something that I want it to. I mean, I've got loads of things which do things like scrape a website and provide it for me as an RSS feed.
Yes.
And I wrote a thing for my dad which takes a load of photos in a folder and makes a DVD out of them, where DVD slideshow that play in ordinary DVD players. But in the past, I've never released that software because it's all, you know, it's got hard-coded paths in it. Yeah. And it's not suitable for use by ordinary people. And there's no GUI. And it probably doesn't work if you're not on Ubuntu. And so on. So I don't release it because I feel guilty putting out software. Because software ought to be easy to use. I bang on and on and on and on and on about this.
Yes.
And I don't want to contribute to the world of not easy to use. You have to go and tweak it and edit this config file software because that's bad. So I don't release it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, then I've got a load of software which other people might find useful, and so I don't. So maybe I should release it. Mm. So this year, my intention is when I do something, I'm not going to make a big deal and say, here's a piece of software that you should use. I'll just say, here's something.
Here it is. You want to use it?
You want to use it, go ahead. If you don't,
up your pipe.
Don't worry about it. But I'm not going to present it as being software. Some of the JavaScript stuff I write, I try very, very hard to make sure that it works everywhere, and it's really easy to drop into place and things like that. But this year, the plan is, when I write little things, I'm just going to say, here they are, just post them on the weblog.
Cool.
So to conclude, right, you're a fat ginger bastard.
And you love pies.
Thank you all.
Sorry.
Time, gentlemen, please!
Here, Mick.
Yes, lads.
Can you, you know, sort us out with a bit of a... lock-in?
I don't know, Sunshine. I'm not sure it's such a good idea.
In the first of a series about lock-in, specifically vendor lock-in, this week we're going to ask, is it a good idea for a distributor of open source software to tie their products closely together at the expense of the rest of the open source community?
Yes. So as an example, should...
Surprise me. Who are you going to come up with as an example, Jonathan?
So as an example, should Tiny Sofa Linux on the desktop work better with Tiny Sofa Linux on the server?
being fairly serious, you've only, you've only really got three examples of this, Ubuntu, Red Hat, and SUSE.
So it's a serious example. Ubuntu server, should it work better with Ubuntu desktop in the interest of making things easier to use, in the interest of interoperability, at the expense of Ubuntu server working well with Fedora on the desktop?
So you're talking about putting things onto the server such in the same way that Microsoft have Active Directory. Which works very well with all their clients and nobody else can go to work properly.
It seems that a certain perspective is that if you buy products from the same organization in the Microsoft world, such as Microsoft, then they seem to work pretty well together and you feel that sense of interoperability. Now, is this right in the open source world?
Yeah, I mean, there's something we probably ought to be fairly clear about is that when Microsoft do it, part of the reason is that other Microsoft products can get documentation for the protocols or whatever that they use. And sometimes we in the open source community have had trouble getting that documentation. Yeah. I don't think we're talking about Fedora, say, implementing something secret and proprietary that talks to Red Hat Enterprise Server. It'll be documented, just the Fedora people get a bit of a leg up because they're in the same company.
I guess optimizing their client applications and their server applications to work well together at the expense of other people.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got, let's pick an example. You've got a Red Hat Enterprise server, which manages your user accounts. Do you have Fedora systems out there? No, to start up and go looking for a Fedora directory server.
Thing is,
and automatically pick up user accounts from it without you having to configure NIS or ELK. Much or first thing.
I was just going to say, I think our listener community are sufficiently intelligent enough for us to understand what the fuck we're talking about. We've explained we're not it four or five times now. I think we know what we're talking about.
Well, I was going to say, you see, the first thing when this was suggested as something we should talk about, the first thing that came to my mind was digital CDC, NCR, and a whole bunch of other proprietary vendors who all tied their products in beautifully with all their other different parts of their product range. And no longer exist. Tying everything into one server is tying all your products together. You end up with vendor lock-in.
You could
and
say
vendor lock-in is a bad thing.
You could say that about Microsoft and Apple, and they've been tremendously successful.
I guess an exchange is a great example of this kind of thing. I mean,
do we really want to be Microsoft or Apple?
Again,
I'd say a lot of people do want to be Microsoft or Apple in terms of that level of use.
But they don't. I mean, again, part of the point about Exchange is that it's difficult for other people to interoperate with Exchange because it's not fully documented. IMAP's documented, but the Exchange protocol isn't, which is why it's harder for Evolution to talk to it, for example. But I don't think anyone's suggesting that we invent proprietary protocols, tie them together.
Let's make an assumption for a second that we're talking about open protocols.
Yeah. So there's no
integration
reason,
we're talking about.
There's no reason why other distros, other Linux distributions, other server operating systems couldn't implement these things. It's just that they'll be behind. Because, you know, say Ubuntu do it, then Ubuntu Desktop integrates better with Ubuntu Server. Mm. In some way, other people will be able to implement it, but they'll have to decide.
I mean, you're essentially 6 months behind.
You're essentially leveraging your huge desktop majority, which I think Ubuntu probably have, to sell your servers. To basically to damage Red Hat and SUSE and other Linux distributions.
Now, hang on a second. It depends on your view. And
think of it as Fedora doing it then.
Yeah, that's still if Fedora did it and to damage Red Hat, to damage Ubuntu, that would be a bad thing.
I don't think we're citing any blame at any particular.
I don't think we're talking about damage either. I think it's just giving themselves a leg up for their own.
That's essentially
fight.
What you're saying. You're saying like, if all your desktops are Ubuntu, and I'm bashing Ubuntu, and I don't really mean to, just as you say for Fedora.
You know, fuck you.
Well, let's fuck you too.
Let's just point out. Fuck you. You want to fight? You want to. Listen, can you hear that? Can you hear that? That's me.
It's the sound of the least threatening man I've ever seen.
He's randomly slapping himself in the shoulder.
The point is that Ubuntu have all of these desktops out there. Yeah. And so by doing that sort of thing, you would then be basically saying, hey, use Ubuntu Server and don't use Red Hat because it doesn't really work as well with all this stuff. Don't use SUSE because it doesn't work as well. Ours works really well. Everybody use our stuff.
To some extent, remember the flip side of this coin, though, is that you're saying use this because it's a nicer experience for you. You're not just doing it just. I don't think anyone would do it with the sole goal in mind being to damage other distribution and damage take-up of other distributions. Mm. It's more to be able to say, you know, an example for me at home is that it would be nice if I wanted to do backups on my machine at home. There are plenty of backup solutions for Ubuntu, which is what I use. And a lot of them will let you write to a drive somewhere else on the same computer that you're on. Yeah. And some of them will let you go and set up an rsync thing. But it would be jolly nice if I plugged an Ubuntu server into my network and then I started up the backup client on Ubuntu. It said, I've discovered a backup server. Do you want to back up to that? And I just said, yes, please. That's it. That's all it took. Now, there wouldn't be anything secret in that. It would just use, you know, the backup server would advertise itself with zeroconf. The backup client would know how to listen for zeroconf advertisements for backup servers. And then it would basically just do rsync in between. There's nothing secret.
Yeah. I mean,
that would be jolly nice for home users, for example. So it's not just about saying, no, you need an Ubuntu server. Oh, fuck those Red Hat people. That's not what it's about. It's a lot harder to do that kind of thing, that kind of nice experience. Because at the moment, rsync servers don't advertise themselves over zeroconf.
There's two different things we're talking about here, right? If you did that and you then released your source code for your client and the server part of it, and then Red Hat to come along, compile it and install it on theirs, and it would all work on theirs as well.
Yeah.
Great. Fantastic. Not a problem with that. It's when they can't do that for some reason, because it depends on...
I don't think we'd stop...
It depends on zeroconf, for example, which I don't think comes on Red Hat servers. I might be wrong on that. But that kind of stuff that comes on one distribution servers and doesn't...
But equally, so I mean, if you're Ubuntu and you're doing this, say...
Hmm.
It's not unreasonable. They can say, well, we're going to put zeroconf on this. Why should you have to limit what your server can do to the lowest common denominator of all servers across the open source community? This is the point. How much should you diverge from allowing any other server to plug into your network in the same place in order to provide a nicer user experience for people?
I think the thing is here is that... to me, there's a few things that float around in my head. Is that I think so long as the core... thing that we always want to rely on open standards, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about open standards. That's the most important thing. Is when we start, when distributions start relying on closed protocols and all that kind of stuff, that's when all of us tend to feel that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
So open standards is the most important thing. The other thing is that integration with other open software is not new. This is the reason why a lot of people like to use GNOME or KDE applications, because they integrate with the desktop better. And yes, there's things like free desktop to help cross-desktop stuff happen, but fundamentally, you really care about stuff in that particular desktop. That's the reason why if you're a GNOME user, you'll tend to try and find GNOME applications if you can. Otherwise, you'll run a KDE application belligerently because it doesn't integrate as nicely. So there's nothing wrong with that in my mind. The problem is that I personally think that from a usability perspective and from an ease-of-use perspective, it makes absolute sense because... invariably, using Ubuntu as an example, the server team and the desktop team are all from the same community. So the connections are going to be a lot closer than the minute you want to do something cool, having to have this fucking finger in the air until every bloody distribution weighs in on it. It's not so much about stopping people
doing cool things. There's kind of this subtle grey, subtle line where, Ubuntu should be able to do whatever they want with their servers and their desktops, and Red Hat should be able to do the same with Fedora and their servers. It's the point where you're implementing that in such a way that it's not easy for the other people to then use. But it's an attitude in the way you develop it.
But everything we're talking about is open source.
Yeah, we're not only talking about open standards, we're talking about open source software. So it's not just a question of saying, here's the standards documentation, go and write your own server to go into Novell server. Here's the source, just compile it and run it.
It listens on port 11618. This is the way distributions work. So as an example, you know, Ubuntu developed the Easy Codec installation, you know, the press one button and, you know, and you get your codecs installed and that kind of stuff. And then that ended up in Fedora. Now, that's because it's open source, and likewise, there's been things that have been developed in Fedora have appeared in Ubuntu.
Yeah.
That's the greatest thing about it. I don't see anything wrong with that, but also... No,
I mean, that's a good thing. I'm quite happy with that.
But also, where I can kind of see where I think Chris is coming from is that it just, in some ways, even though I can see it legitimizing it, doesn't feel right, you know? It kind of... I'd love to see Ubuntu desktop work with every... server, it doesn't matter what it is. But I can also understand that we can make cooler shit happen quicker for it to work with Ubuntu server.
I mean, what the thing I'm thinking here is, for example, imagine something as silly as just like an extra flag in a TCP/IP packet that says that, like, an extra option. As long as we're talking about open protocols, I think we're cool.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you start just doing little things, little tweaks like that, and say the client application sends a packet to the server and the server responds and goes, ah, you can do this, can't you?
Yeah.
You've got this extra little thing.
It's kind of an analogy in some ways with like Mozilla, and how there's, you know, there's Mozilla specific style sheet things in there. And it's kind of a bit frowned upon because people say, you know, you should stick to the open CSS standards.
Yeah.
And using those things kind of locks people into a Mozilla web.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean, and that doesn't feel right.
So this is where I'm just struggling. Yeah. I don't like the idea of being basically. You end up locking people in to the
it's choice.
It's not a lock. You're not forcing people into it. But it's, I mean, to pick a perfect example of this, sysadmin people. Yeah. You know when you do a TCP handshake.
Yeah.
Right. And I say syn and you say ack and then I say whatever. Yeah. The way IE used to work. When it sent a request, it wouldn't go syn and then you'd say ack and then I'd say here's my request. It'd just go request. Right?
Right.
And you, as Apache, would then go, what the fuck, what? And then I, as IE, would go, oh, you're an ordinary server. Right, okay, syn, ack, request. But if you were IIS, it didn't need the syn and ack. It would just go, oh, that's a request, fine, I'll reply to it. Which meant that IE, when requesting stuff from IIS servers, worked faster. It completely fucking broke TCP. But it made it look faster in benchmarks. It made IE feel faster when you were using it. Now, that was totally undocumented. Right,
but even if you documented that and released that as an open standard, that wouldn't be.
I was going to say, so that's playing a bit fast and loose. I mean, you could say, look, we've documented this. Here's the source code for it, but it's still
and you can implement it. I mean, it'll break everything else, but don't you can implement it our way.
It plays a bit fast and loose with the concept. I mean, would you do that kind of thing?
I think where it's hard. Where this is a really interesting.
I think that's diverging from the accepted standards, isn't it? That's a little dangerous.
Well, I think this is an interesting problem. Is that typically when people talk about vendor lock-in. One side of the handshake, using that analogy, is proprietary, and the other side isn't. And that's where it's a problem. But we're all talking about open source software. We're talking about free software. What we're talking about is not everybody being able to eat from the same cake at the same time. Yeah. So in which case, Ubuntu, using Ubuntu as an example, and we all understand we're not assigning blame to any distributor, but if Ubuntu made something easier with Ubuntu server, it's kind of... It's as if people are saying, well, hang on a second, that's not good because that means that there's an advantage with Ubuntu. And yes, that advantage could be in Fedora in the next version, but it would take 6 months. And I don't see any problem with that, personally.
The problem with it, I think, if you said to me, here's the backup client for Ubuntu, take the example I gave earlier. Yeah. If you put an Ubuntu server on your network, all your other machines will just detect it and back up to it straight away. You have to click about two buttons. I'd get it like a fucking shot.
Yeah.
Right? So even though you'd be saying, no, it's all open, it's all fine, it would feel like you were trying to lock people. It would feel like Canonical were trying to lock people into Ubuntu, even though they're actually not. If Red Hat did it, if Red Hat worked magically, or if Fedora did something similar to that with Red Hat Enterprise Server, that would convince me to go out. It would convince me to go out and get CentOS, actually. But it would convince me to go out and get it. So it would feel like they were trying to lock me in, even though they weren't. So you get bad PR from it.
No, but hang on a second. That depends on the perception. There'd be bad PR within aspects of the open source community. But those aspects
from a user perspective, brilliant.
But those are the aspects in the open source community will believe that unless every distro moves ahead with exactly the same level of footprints every hour of the day, you know, at the same pace.
I think you're turning it to an extreme now. I don't, you know, nothing to stop Ubuntu developing their own stuff and Red Hat developing their own stuff. Just they both do, and that's cool.
Yeah,
and
but yes, what you're saying is that if let's say, Ubuntu.
You're basically leveraging one advantage you have to give yourself more advantage over the other distros without.
No, but what you're doing is you're making one piece of open source software work well with another piece of open source software. That's like saying, hang on a second, why are the GNOME project only allowing people to work with GTK? Why can't they work with Qt? At some point, you've got to draw a line. The difference here is that we're talking about a brand. We're talking about Ubuntu, or we're talking about Red Hat, or whatever.
Hmm.
I don't see anything wrong with making one thing. I can understand that but part of me as well feels, it doesn't feel quite open and is integrated. But then I think to myself, in the same way that I can't remember what it was, but Ak was talking about something and said, I think it was AdSense. Ak was saying, you know, I don't see anything actually wrong with AdSense.
but it doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. couldn't think of any legitimate reasons not to use it, but just it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And I think in those situations, it's tempting to think, well, it doesn't feel right, so therefore we should not do it. Whereas...
But I think maybe we should... I mean, Chris, take an example. I understand your point. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand it. Imagine, then, that someone had already written this backup client and this backup server, which perfectly integrated together. It wasn't canonically. It wasn't the Ubuntu community who'd written it. It wasn't the Fedora community. Just some guy wrote a client and a server.
Yeah.
And then Ubuntu decided to package that and install it as part of the base installation on Ubuntu desktop and Ubuntu server.
So that's,
but these are Fedora and Red Hat don't decide that.
That's their problem. At that
point,
to be honest.
That's isn't it exact? Why does it make any difference?
But no, I'm talking about stuff like say if you had to have a particular kernel patch to make this stuff work. And Ubuntu packaged all of that up, and it was kind of tricky for other people to do that without breaking other things. And
so,
you know,
so the point. So the point is,
you are technically within the definition of open source, and that's. But you're kind of playing fast and loose.
It feels like you're obeying the letter of the law rather than
not the spirit of it. Yeah, that's where I'm struggling.
But basically, your opinion is you'd be fine with people doing this as long as they make it easy for other people to do it.
Yeah.
You don't put any blockers in the way of other people
taking
exactly, the same part.
It's putting the blockers in.
Exactly the same stuff. Exactly the same debate happens when you're talking about distributions patching upstream software.
OpenOffice, I think people argue about it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's things like OpenOffice. I mean, there's in my world, it's a case of Ubuntu sending patches back up to Debian. You know, and it's one thing providing the minimum, and there's another thing providing what's useful. But I don't know. I'd love to find out what people think about this. I know there's a thread in the forums, but I'd love people to write in and find and tell us, because it's something that, I don't know about you guys, but I genuinely don't have a wholesale view about this. I just don't really feel one way or the other. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but part of me does feel like it's
a bit odd.
I think
as an end user, you can obviously see the benefit that all of a sudden all your shit just works
exactly,
better together.
Yeah.
But I think if people were to just kind of code dump something like 6 months later, so, oh yeah, by the way, all that thing that everyone was on about, here it is.
Yeah.
But we've already been doing it for 9 months or 6 months.
You need to, engage with the community. Yeah, I mean, you want to be... The question is whether you try and get it developed upstream first and then it filters down into your distro, or whether you develop it in your distro first and then try and get it upstream.
Yeah.
That's a whole big issue.
It's basically a very grey area. There's kind of,
It is. People write in and tell us what you think.
People write in and support me.
I don't think there's any problem with doing this. It'd just be nice. You've got to do it in the open, otherwise everyone's going to bitch.
Yeah, just doing it the right way.
That's one thing we definitely all agree on. Yeah.
So we have dates for Lug Radio Live US, finally.
It's very exciting, isn't it? Very exciting.
We appreciate it's taken some time to get this sorted out, and we're sorry. Thank you all for waiting. And announce the date.
Well, let's say where it is. It's in San Francisco. It's at the Metreon. Metreon. That's people in San Francisco going, wow. People outside San Francisco are saying, where the fuck?
Look it up. It's on the web.
And the dates are...
the 12th and 13th of April... 2008.
Yes, indeed. Book your plane tickets. The contract is pretty much secured.
Yeah, we're now fine. It's really happening on those dates. If you want to go and book plane tickets, you can now go and do it. 12th and 13th of April. That's a Saturday and a Sunday. There's likely to be a pre-show party on the Friday night, so if you want to show up on Friday or whatever.
Come on, Friday, drink beer with it. Buy us beer.
Yes, there is currently no Lug Radio Live website, but there will be when I pull my finger out.
But when you will be able to go to lugradio.org/live to access the Lug Radio Live website.
You will. Important thing about this one, you will have to book tickets in advance. There will not be any tickets for sale on the door.
Yep. So,
fire regulations or something about
something,
that.
Something like that.
Just a very good legal reason for it.
Americans, we love you for running the world and everything, but, you know, your union rules all suck.
Yeah, the very good legal reasons that Americans are nutters. That's why.
They're lovely people who are putting us up for a weekend.
They are very lovely people.
All of the Americans. Float things at us if we're too nasty.
12th and 13th of April, 2008, The Metreon, San Francisco, Lug Radio Live, USA.
It's happening. Before we finish this very short segment... This is now, we're going to now start working on people coming to Lug Radio Live USA to exhibit and to speak. So if you would like to speak at Lug Radio Live in the USA, send us an email to show@lugradio.org with what you'd like to talk about. And importantly, if your project wants to exhibit there, then get in touch with us at show@lugradio.org. Because we're gonna have some exhibition space there as well.
Yeah, there'll be an official call for papers to go up once I've sorted the website out. But for now, send us an email, show@lugradio.org.
It's a fucking great venue, isn't it? It's a fucking great venue. It's like, how many floors up is it? It looks out across the bay or San Francisco or something, doesn't
it? Or something like that. That like place where we will be.
Yeah. So, I can't remember if it's out across the bay or whether
I think
it's out,
I think it's out across San Francisco.
Yeah, it's close central San Francisco.
It's a wicked venue. Right. So, yes, we 12th and 13th of April. Here we go.
We look forward to seeing you.
EEPC from Asus. It is the laptop revolution that's taken us all by storm. We reviewed it a couple of episodes back and we fucking love it. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, goats and sheep, you can win one in our competition, Pimp My Lug Radio. Over to you,
Graham.
Graham.
Reminder. Indeed, what you have to do with this competition is produce some promotional material for Lug Radio. This is not for Lug Radio Live, this is for Lug Radio itself. Do us a poster, do us an audio mashup, do us an audio advert, do us a video advert, produce some banner ads.
Mm.
Anything that we can use to promote the show, and the best one wins an Asus EEPC. Now, a couple of things about this. The first one is, we're basically giving you permission to mash up and remix any of the shows, but not the interviews.
Yes.
As part of this, if you want to. So if you want to take snippets from older shows from this season or from the previous seasons, go ahead and do it. The second thing is, please don't send us the things. Instead, put them up on the web somewhere and then drop us an email with a link to them.
If you have problems hosting them somewhere, get in touch and we can try and figure something out.
Yeah.
Do not send them to show@lugradio.org. You will be mocked on air.
You will be mocked on air. So yes, get them in. Best one, Asus EEPC.
Yes, indeed. The other thing is you need to bear in mind is that your entry must be licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license, and that's what we're going to be using. And if you do submit it, consider that we will be even if you don't win it, we might use your entry in pimping the show. So be adventurous. We've had some great entries in so far, and we've had some phenomenal creativity being demonstrated by the Lug Radio fans. So
we have indeed. Go to, if you want to know more about it, go to lugradio.org/pimpmylugradio.
And we look forward to seeing your entries.
And don't forget, it's so good, the EPC has more than one E in its name.
Oh, it's fantastic.
End of the emails, time for the show.
All right. We'll take your word for it, you crazy bastard.
Badum tish.
Would you like to begin?
Right, I've got one. I got one here from John Wesley.
One ear? What, did you chop it off? You've joined the mafia or something?
This is a joke, isn't it?
What?
Last time I checked.
Van Gogh goes into the bar. So, do you want a pint, mate? So, no, I've got one here. Okay. I thought one of you had told me this today, but end of the show, time for the emails. John Wesley here suggests that old Unixes suck big donkey balls. Greetings, Midlanders. I happen to work for IBM and have first-hand experience of using AIX, our own joyous homemade Unix, and HP UX. So in order of the one I hate the least by a very tiny amount, AIX. Yes, our own backslapping self-congratulatory version of Unix. What's good? Some of the commands you love exist. You can even use TCSH to get the frequently required joy of tab completion.
That's a good point.
Handy, but if is it getting excited about TC?
You can use TC-tion. That's a good point about AIX.
I'm thinking his life isn't quite exciting enough. I don't mean to take the piss out of you, my man.
But he's going to do it anyway.
Yeah, sorry. But that's what you come for, isn't it?
While you were asleep, IBM, we entered the 21st century.
So, what's bad? For some reason, the default AIX installation has all logging turned off. What's awful? Turning on logging is ridiculously hard. None of the commands support the options that you expect, i.e. minus H.
Log in is logging. Log in with a G.
You
can't log in. IBM charge you £10,000 for 2 days consultancy.
At least if it were Windows in the same, it would say, we are very sorry, please wait, logging is denied. Windows will get back to you. HP UX is generally regarded as sick by most members of the department.
Sick. As in a good thing, because people will say, that's totally sick.
I'm guessing he means twisted in this case. It's a single quote rather than a double quote.
Rubbish.
I can't believe I'm doing little rabbit's ears about the quotes next to the microphone here.
It's all right.
Because some days it just randomly fails tests for no apparent reason. What's good? Little to nothing. Nothing that I can tell. I'm just leaving scope just in case you get a free packet of biscuits when you buy a new HP UX box. What's bad? When using PuTTY, both the backspace key and the at symbol get mapped to carriage return line feedy thing. What's awful? No choice of shells. No tab completion. Untar, yes. Untar, yes. Unzip, no. Which makes .tar.gz files pretty annoying.
Board.sha.
Can't correct the command line, and up doesn't give you the last command. In conclusion, it's these kind of operating systems that force me to learn Fire, because that's the only editing option. For that reason alone, I will end them all. Love and hugs, John H.
When he says end them all, this isn't murder, is it?
I don't know. He just says, for the reason alone, I will end them all.
Uh-oh.
I think this was his last ever email to anyone, wasn't it?
I think we've had two fucking nutters writing this.
No, you see, I don't think this should have been an email. I think it should have been a video on Al Jazeera.
I wanted to say, actually, about this email, there's a very, very good thread on the forums. That's forums.lugradio.org, and the title is Real, which is in capital letters, Real Unix.
It's Hugh L, I think.
Yeah, Hugh L is the first poster on the subject. It's just dropping down the list of forum posts at the moment. So
lots of people whistling the Hovis theme tune and then saying, yeah, I remember the days when I had to use Sonos 4. It's just terrible, honestly. Okay, next email is from Scotty Fitzgerald, who says, just wanted to send a request for a plug. So are we going to plug his thing?
Butt variety?
What? No. Just a plug. We can send him one.
No. A request for a plug for the new hackerpublicradio.org. It's a new show, which is a descendant of BinRev Radio, which was a descendant of Radio Freak America, which was a descendant of HackerMind. It's the show behind the show behind the show behind the show, which is something like Series 5 of 24, as far as I can tell. So a new show hits the air. Had to share it with you guys. Yours, thanks, Scotty Fitzgerald. So yes, go to hackerpublicradio.org.
Excellent. We've had an email from Simon Pascal Klein, who's Klepas on IRC, and I think he's been on the forums as well. He says, morning, my brown-nosed friends. Well, fuck off. I don't even know what that means.
You've got a brown nose.
No, I don't.
You do. That's why your shuttle was made.
I too found that the OG versions of the show no longer work on my iRobot. At this point,
we don't know what's wrong. If someone wants to help me, that's fine. I have posted more than once the encoding lines that I use to.
Don't worry about it though.
Because he's now bought an iPod and downloads the MP3 version.
Because he...
I've forced someone away from freedom. Fantastic.
He has found the solution... Well, the reason for our problems. He says, but it worked before when Matt was doing it. Rather than seeking an audio GIMP's help from the forums, you could just ask Matt how he did it.
Oh, you're right. I could do that.
But there were other people bitching when Matt did it.
Also, we don't actually like Matt anymore.
That's
bullshit, by the way.
Given that you were in the pub with him only about a week and a half ago.
That's going to be chopped out and used in a derogatory way.
Also, importantly, you seem to be labouring under the misapprehension that if I say to Matt, how did you encode the show? He'll go, oh, like this, rather than going, oh, fuck me, I don't remember. Which is what he actually says.
Do a search for lame settings on Google.
Would be ogging settings, is the point.
Don't mean to be giving you lazy bastards a hard time. Well, you're doing a good job of it. Thanks, pal. Take care and keep up the show. Keep up the show? What does that mean? Fucking convinced. Totally love the blooper starting at the starting of each show. That's not a blooper. That's fucking content, by the way.
This guy doesn't sound like such a bad character. It's just that you don't like him anymore, do you?
He says, thought, Lug Radio blooper section every season or something. We generally try to do something like that.
Hence the last episode.
Ripping on him a bit, but I do know him. He's a good guy. So thanks very much, Klepas, for sending us the email.
Cheers for that. Yes, we know about the encoding problems. If someone could help, we'd love to hear from you.
Coincidentally, I've had an email from Sean Ellis, who says...
Why is it a coincidence?
Listen.
The content.
here's the deal. Chris does the talking. You don't.
Shut up. So he says, in your latest episode, you bemoaned the lack of Og Vorbis players for cars.
Ah.
Ironic, I thought, as I was listening to the Og version of the podcast on my way home in my car. It obviously works for somebody.
That is somewhat ironic.
Thus.
Is this the guy with like a Sun server in his boot?
I was thinking that as well.
No, it's not. He bought his OG-capable car radio from Lidl for 50 quid. Best 50 quid he ever spent.
Right.
Lidl.
L-I-D-L. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
He says, there is a list of a dozen or so supported car radios on the Ziff wiki at wiki.ziff.org/index.php.
Oh, fantastic.
That can't be that new, because I looked myself.
Players. So you've just talked over all
Sorry, I've just talked over the URL, haven't I?
You have.
Sorry.
Would you like to read it out again?
wiki.zif.org/index.php/static players. That's ZIF, XIPH.
Mr. Ben has just exploded that we haven't used Linkbot.
This is, yes. Sorry.
But, yeah.
Yeah, ZIF being the people who invented Og.
That's very interesting. Oh, that's pretty cool. Do you shop at Lidl regularly, Adam?
No.
Why?
You just said you were looking there, surely.
No, the fucking wiki, man.
Oh, right.
Lidl for Americans and Australians and everybody else who's not in Britain. Which is
which is quite a few.
Most of you, then, I guess. Lidl is a budget supermarket, basically.
Run by the budget.
I ought to point out, this is a man, Jonathan Bacon, who shops at Morrison's and sneers at Lidl people. I wouldn't push it too hard if I was you. He's not exactly Fortnum and Mason, the place you go. Right, Adamski, okay, speak on.
I guess it's my turn again. I've got an email from David Cooper called Virtualization of Go-Go. I hope you'll forgive me. I'm not going to read
it's
all out.
It's a Wham song, isn't it?
Shut up. Penis. we've been told off about things like that, haven't we?
We have been told off about that.
Okay, so I hope you'll forgive me. I'm not going to read out all of your email. Basically, he just wants to say thanks for the episode where we entitled Bottom Trumps. I didn't realise that was the name of the show, by the way, where we were talking about virtualization. And we encouraged him to go off and get a VMware converter, turn his Windows partition into a VMware file, and now he's running Ubuntu. And his wife can use Windows in the VMware player, and which quits her fucking whining. He doesn't say that literally, but I guess
that's
thought
basically
it.
where we're at here.
That's what he thought, but he knew his wife would hear the episode.
quits her fucking whining.
Well, yeah. So he describes her as his whining fiance. So they are. You're in the shit now, mate. Anyway, so I just want the reason why I wanted to read this was P.S. I had an idea for making a drinking game from your show. I call it Drink Alonga Jono. Every time Jono says community, you take a shot. The first time I tried this, I lost 3 days.
Thanks very much, incidentally.
Nice. Email from Steve Homer. Lee said about that in the picture, I think. I have yet to listen.
Unlucky dude.
I have yet to listen to your show dating 31st 12th 07, but I've noticed that it's less than an hour long. Given that any successful Lug Radio experience involves at least 30 minutes of Jono pimping canonical, all hail our brown masters. 20 minutes of Ack bitching about his laptop not working. 15 minutes of Adam relating excessive bandwidth utilisation to forced sodomy. And that's 5 minutes of taking the piss out of Chris's surname, one could hardly imagine where you'll have time for the hard-hitting news we so enjoy. despite having not listened to this show yet, please mark this down as a much do better on the evidence above. Yours, dissatisfied in Stockton, Steve. Seriously, keep up the good work, guys. So thank you very much, Steve Homer.
Cool.
That's it. We appreciate that. Yeah, it was a short show. That's because Jono did it by himself, which is why it was bollocks.
Thank you, by the way.
I mean, excellent. We weren't too busy eating mince pies and not recording a show at any point, obviously.
Yeah. Notice that I lost about 6 hours of my life having to edit that show together. Incidentally, just so our listeners know, I said, you know, okay, well, we're not going to have time to record a show. So I said, why don't we do a compilation? I said, why don't we send all the best bits in? And then we'll all go away. We'll all listen to the shows. And then everybody can send me recommendations and times. I got fuck all from these three workshop
peasants. Were too busy eating mince pies.
That would be roughly about the same time that we were all busy emailing all of the people we've ever interviewed. And then you, Mr. Bacon, jumped in a good 2 weeks after everyone else to do your bit, which was hard. Half the size of everyone else's
I've
bit.
I've done it.
So I wouldn't piss and moan too much if I was you.
You'll notice that I've done it and most of my names are completed.
Yes, well
and
done.
I've dealt with two seasons.
Oh, one and five. Yes. One which didn't have any interviews and five which is only 8 episodes
in. One had quite a few interviews of which most of the interviews are either dead or have gone missing.
Unlucky.
Exact a mondo. We've had an interesting post in the forums. Forums.lugradio.org, and the subject of the post is, and Theo said to Richard,
seething already about this.
Free Software fans will know at this point the Theo is Theo Durard, and the Richard is Richard Stallman, and the Chris that's about to explode in the corner is Chris Proctor. This was from, hang on, is it Spilts or Spitz or something? I can't read it from here.
Spills,
with a Z. Say, basically, says, Theo Durard says, Richard, your pants are full of hypocritical poo. All too funny earlier. And then an OpenBSD has said, why don't you ask Theo whom you once praised about OpenBSD? And then RMS apparently says, because he tends to be unfriendly. Yes. He says, enjoy all 432 messages starting from the beginning.
You see, that
at
was
this ridiculous Earl that I'm not going to read out. Pay special attention to Theo Durard's vitriol. So
that email thread was 432 emails at the time and is now near 600, so of which there are about six that are worth reading.
So why don't we ask our resident BSD goon in the corner? So this is basically,
I knew there was a booting coming.
This is basically about Richard Stallman.
Yeah, Richard Stallman said on the BSD talk podcast, said he couldn't recommend OpenBSD because it, and I have to be very careful here, it recommends non-free software or something.
Right.
To which everybody on the OpenBSD mailing list went, no, it doesn't. And so he then wrote, oh, well, what I really meant was, and tried to explain what he meant. And 600 emails later, it seems to have descended into just stupid name calling.
Right, so let's get to the juice, right? What did Theo, the governor, Durard say?
Hypocrite.
In his usual understated way.
Yeah, you know, that was about the level of it. There is, seriously, the people on MISC at openbsd.org, which is the mailing list, seem to regard
the whole world MISC.
Well, yeah.
Can't it be filed in the MISC?
Yeah, they seem to regard a good and well-reasoned argument as how many times they can use the word hypocrite in one email, and how many different spellings they can do.
I have a question.
How many capital letters they can use, and it's really pissing me off.
Christopher, can you tell? Then. Who's in the right?
To be fair, in the argument, Stallman pokes forward a sensible, well-reasoned argument. Whether he's right or not, I'm not sure. But he is always
calm,
level, and well-argued. And everybody else just goes, ah!
Am I right in thinking it was something along the lines that Stallman said he couldn't recommend OpenBSD to people he knows because there is non-free software in the repositories somewhere,
basically,
or something
you
like that.
The repositories include right. One more question, non-free
sorry.
Software.
Did any beards catch fire? So I'm sure they must have done.
Wow.
Did any beards catch fire?
It must have, with all these flames flying around.
It does sound,
there was, yeah.
It does sound dangerous for heavily bearded individuals.
It did, yeah.
You're quite pissed off about this, aren't you, Chris?
I am. It just went on and on. I mean, seriously, when people start accusing Richard Stallman of being a terrorist.
What?
Because
you're being a terrorist?
Because he doesn't agree with their point of view.
I'll tell you what's
and, in. Yeah, this is the point where I really have to go, you know, RM minus RF.
So you're disappointed in your BSD brethren.
I'm moving over to NetBSD just because they're fucking wankers.
Wow.
Wow, blimey.
This is great. I like this side of Chris.
I'm sorry, I'm really getting
mad. Also, have you got a toaster you need to run it on or something? Are you really moving to NetBSD?
Yeah, probably.
Really? Just because of this rack?
Well, not just because of this, but...
Can I make a suggestion?
Seriously, it's reached the stage where they're so annoying. If they could put a reasonable argument together for why he's wrong, I would be quite happy, but they just can't.
Can I make a suggestion to you? You might have heard of this thing called Linux, right? Have you thought about moving to that? You know,
it sounds like
feel the love. It's an up and coming operating system.
It's like BSD, but
with drivers.
It works. You'll find that all of that. You know that.
So does it run on my toaster?
It will do. It will do.
I am reliably informed that Linux runs on more architectures than everything else.
Anyway,
this is an argument. But okay.
Anyway,
we await your BSD laden flames in our email account.
I have one interesting comment about this whole situation.
It's going to be fuck BSD or something now.
No,
you watch.
No. Stallman went on a BSD podcast.
Yeah.
Yet we got the cold shoulder.
Yeah, he's on BSD Talk episode 130 something.
So if we were BSD Radio, it would be.
He would have come on. Yeah.
Interesting, he went on a podcast for something that he wouldn't recommend, because usually when it's something that he disagrees with, he just doesn't go on there. Not that we particularly want him on here, but I just found that interesting. It seems like a
Yeah, I've honestly no idea why you went on there, but
yeah. He did. So there we go.
The thing for, that interests me about this, sorry to drag it back again, is it would be quite. I would have liked to have quite paid attention to two large argumentative figures in the pre-Unix world arguing the toss.
Yeah.
And also, I really, really enjoyed watching Chris get really pissed off about it.
That was brilliant.
I don't know why it winds me up so much. Although the email where Richard Stallman says, Theo tends to be unfriendly, is a classic. Classically unfriendly.
The only art versus Richard Stallman.
I like this angry Chris. We should encourage it. Chris,
I have a lot of time for Theo a lot of the time. You know, he's an unfriendly person, but I have a lot of time for him. He's a very good hacker, and he really kind of... If people attack his project, he's really prepared to stand up for his developers.
Yeah.
But this has just gone so far.
I see a new segment coming here, you know.
I can feel a segment.
Angry Chris.
I think we should wire his nipples up to some kind of power supply and just say, BSD is rubbish. BSD is rubbish. Just see how quickly we can wind him up.
Start putting insulting comments in the network block driver support module or something.
We'll start recording at 4 o'clock in the morning. Wow, fantastic. So have we got anything else? Have you got any
deep
more?
Breathing. Yes. I've had an email from sort of angry people, from Chris Fletcher, who's angry with us.
Do you reckon his nickname's Fletch?
Oh, God, what have we done?
His email address
now?
Is Fletch@, and I won't read any more.
Let's Fletch@wrong.com.
I'm not going to read any more of his email address for reasons that may become apparent.
Yeah.
He says, hey, closet Slackware lovers. This is the guy who was writing about Slackware. Yeah. He says... He said, thanks a bloody lot for reading out the company name of my automatic email signature.
Oops.
I wasn't expecting that. All I can say is that the doctor that delivered you into the world should be shot for smuggling dope. Best regards, Chris Fletcher, an unnamed company, a division of a company that you shouldn't have read out, you bastard. Phone, not bloody likely, email chris@lugradio. It's a collection of fine knobgags.com.
Yeah, I ought to point out here that we didn't expect it either. It was Jono.
Yeah, I was going to point out it was Jono.
Yes. Moron.
I apologise, but I don't care.
No, seriously, we shouldn't have read out his company name.
Yeah, we shouldn't have done, but we thought it was too funny.
In fact, it was so funny, we were going to do it twice, but it's not on this email.
We were tempted at one point to dig up the original email to read it out again.
You were tempted at one point. You were tempted.
Listen, don't get angry with BSD and take it out on me.
I was quite tempted.
Also, we ought to be very clear about this, just in case there's any misunderstandings in this. We hate Slackware. We all hate it. Fuck off.
Axe views do represent the people.
That's us, I think.
I think we're done. So thank you very much. Emails to show@lugradio.org as usual, and of course the forums are at forums.lugradio.org.
Is there any hope of remembering the voicemail number this moment?
But look at lugradio.org/contact and it's written down. Send us voicemails.
It is. And of course, enter the Pimp My Lugradio competition, because you can win yourself an EPC.
And keep your eye out for the website for Lug Radio Live USA.
Yes, indeed.
And come along and shoot other geeks on a Wednesday and a Sunday night playing our non-free Wolf E.T. game.
We pimp the forums as well. Go to the forums and post stuff.
Do go and post stuff. And of course, when we release a show, there's links in the show notes to the forums where you can go and talk. And there's been some fantastic discussion there recently.
Something to say about any of the segments, feed it back on the forums.
And we hope to be announcing the dates for Lugradio Live in the UK, hopefully
in the next show.
So
those of you who are in the UK rather than the US, or are in the US but want to fly here as well, keep your ears open.
So right, end of the show.
Time for the emails. Nope, thank you very much and good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.